All right, let's dive into Exodus. I know. It can seem kind of overwhelming, right? Like facing down a sphinx or something.
Yeah, it's a big book.
It is. But we're here to help you uncover all those hidden treasures.
Exactly. So imagine you're about to crack open Exodus, feeling a little intimidated.
Maybe a bit.
We're going to extract the core themes, some surprising insights, so you're ready to explore it yourself.
That's the goal.
And I'm excited to bring in some points from Dr. John Oswald. He's an expert on Exodus.
Oh, great.
His lecture has some really fresh perspectives.
Awesome. So, Dr. Oswald, right from the start, highlights something interesting about the title, Exodus. You might think, okay, Exodus, it's all about escaping Egypt, right? But he points out that Exodus actually means the way out,
Right.
and it suggests something much deeper.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Think about it. The Israelites were free from slavery by chapter 15.
Okay.
But the book keeps going for another 25 chapters.
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Oswald suggests the real way out isn't just about physical liberation. It's a journey of escaping spiritual darkness and coming to know God personally.
So it's less about changing your address and more about changing your understanding of who God is. That actually resonates with me because haven't we all had times when we yearned for a way out? A tough situation, a bad habit, or even just feeling lost. Perhaps the real escape is about changing our perspective rather than changing our circumstances.
Yeah, and that connects to another point. Dr. Oswald makes the importance of revelation in Exodus. Throughout the early chapters, you keep running into this phrase, "Then you will know that I am Yahweh."
I've always loved that phrase.
It's powerful, isn't it? It's
Yeah.
not just about recognizing God's power. It's about truly understanding his character and his longing to be in a relationship with his people.
It's like more than just knowing the facts about God, it's about a much deeper connection.
It is. And Dr. Oswald points out, knowing in the Bible isn't just about head knowledge. It's about a deep experiential understanding. He makes this great analogy. It's like the difference between knowing about a celebrity and actually knowing them as a friend.
I l love that. It's such a powerful comparison. Imagine knowing all the facts about a celebrity's life, but true knowledge, true intimacy comes from spending time with them, sharing experiences, and truly understanding their heart.
Exactly.
So it's not just about the Israelites witnessing God's miracles, it's about them getting to know God in a more intimate way.
Right.
Which brings us to something I have always wondered about, the tabernacle. Why are there two incredibly detailed descriptions of it? It's a lot of real estate in the text.
That's where Dr. Oswald's insights get really fascinating. He suggests that those detailed descriptions emphasize God's deep desire to dwell among his people. It's not just a set of blueprints for a tent. It's about bridging this immense gap between the divine and humanity.
It's like God saying, look, I don't want to be this distant figure. I want to be right here with you. But I've got to be honest, sometimes I feel like I'm jumping into the middle of a story when I start reading Exodus.
Yeah, I can see that.
What's up with that?
You've hit on an important point. Dr. Oswald actually says that Exodus assumes you already know the backstory, which is in Genesis.
Oh, interesting.
He poses these questions. Who are these people?
Okay.
Who is this Israel?
Right.
And who is this Jacob?
Yeah.
And what's Jacob got to do with Israel? He's basically saying you can't fully grasp Exodus without understanding the promises God made to Abraham back in Genesis.
So it's like trying to watch season two of a show without having seen season one. You're
Exactly.
going to be missing crucial context.
Yeah, you're going to be lost. And that points to something bigger about the Bible itself.
Okay.
It understands human experience as a story unfolding over time. Each book is a chapter in a larger narrative. So Exodus picks up this thread of God's promise to Abraham and then dives into the struggle of the Israelites in Egypt.
Right.
Their enslavement becomes a huge challenge to God's faithfulness.
Oh, wow. So it sounds like the stakes are incredibly high.
They are.
Not just for the Israelites, but for God himself. If he can't deliver on those promises, what does that say about his character?
Right.
But before we get to Moses, Dr. Oswald points out something really interesting about the midwives, Shiphrah and Puah. He mentions that in the story, Pharaoh remains nameless, but the midwives are specifically identified.
It's fascinating, right? You'd think the most powerful man in the world would get a name drop.
Right.
Instead, it's these two seemingly ordinary women
Yeah.
who get that recognition because they defied Pharaoh to protect the Hebrew baby boys. They feared God more than they feared an earthly ruler.
That took some serious guts. I mean, disobeying Pharaoh.
Yeah,
That's incredibly brave.
absolutely. And it reminds us that when we prioritize doing what we believe is right,
yeah,
even when it's scary, God often provides in unexpected ways.
Speaking of unexpected, can we talk about Moses' upbringing? Being raised by the very people who were oppressing his own people must have created some serious internal conflict.
Yeah. It's a powerful example of how God often works in unconventional ways.
Right.
He's not limited by our understanding of how things should happen.
Uh-huh.
But then we see Moses trying to deliver a Hebrew by force.
Oh, yeah.
And it totally backfires.
It does.
He seems to be relying on his own strength rather than seeking God's guidance.
And the Israelites themselves weren't exactly ready for a revolution either.
Right.
They seemed resistant to leadership and had forgotten those promises God made to their ancestors. It makes me think about times when I might be trying to force things to happen on my own timeline instead of trusting in God's timing.
That's a common human struggle.
Yeah.
But as we'll see, God is patient.
Okay.
He uses even our missteps and detours for his purposes.
That's reassuring.
Yeah.
Because we all make mistakes.
We do.
But what about those 40 years Moses spent in Midian?
Mm.
Was that just wasted time? Or was something else happening?
Dr. Oswald suggests that those years in Midian might not have been part of God's original plan, but rather a consequence of Moses' own reluctance.
So maybe more of a detour than a divine appointment. But God can redeem even those, right?
Yeah, absolutely. God is a master at weaving our mistakes into a bigger tapestry.
Yeah.
He used those 40 years to refine Moses' character and prepare him for what lay ahead.
Wow.
And as we wrap up this part of our dive, I want to highlight those closing verses of Exodus 2.
Mm.
Dr. Oswald points to how they reveal a compassionate God, attentive to his people's suffering. He emphasizes those verbs, heard, remembered, and knew, to highlight God's awareness, faithfulness, and connection to the Israelites.
So even though they felt forgotten, God hadn't abandoned them.
No.
He was listening, remembering his promises, and experiencing their pain right along with them. That brings up so many interesting questions about how God interacts with us, even when we feel lost and alone. I can't wait to see what other insights Dr. Oswald has in store. It's amazing to think about God hearing the cries of the Israelites, isn't it? It makes you wonder, like, does God hear our cries too? I mean, does he really know us, like the text says, you know, especially in our darkest moments?
Those are great questions, and they lead us right into the heart of what Dr. Oswald sees as central to Exodus, God's faithfulness to his promises. He reminds us that the Israelites' ultimate deliverance wasn't just about Moses' leadership skills. It was about God's character. God keeps his promises, hears the cries of his people, and acts on their behalf, even when they don't deserve it.
It's a pretty incredible concept, especially since, I mean, we've all had times where we felt like, man, I messed up so badly that God couldn't possibly want anything to do with me. Exodus seems to offer a different perspective that even at our worst, God is still working, still faithful, and still reaching out.
Yes, and you see that divine faithfulness on full display in the next section of Exodus. You remember how that phrase, "then you will know that I am Yahweh," comes up repeatedly?
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Oswald really emphasizes those words. It's like God is orchestrating these events, the plagues, the parting of the Red Sea, not just as displays of power, but as a revelation of who he truly is.
So it's less about special effects and more about revealing God's character. It seems like they're experiencing God in action, which, I mean, that must have changed everything for them.
Precisely. And it's interesting what Dr. Oswald says about the name Yahweh. It's more than just a name. It's a declaration of God's essence. I am, he points out, speaks to God's self-existence, his eternality, his unchanging nature. He's the God who is always present, always acting, always faithful.
Wow. It's like that name takes on a whole new meaning. Yahweh is less of a label and more of a profound statement of who God is at his very core.
And this God who is also a God who cares. Dr. Oswald spends a good amount of time discussing God's providence throughout Exodus. He highlights how God provides water, food, even protection for the Israelites during their journey. It's like every step of the way, God is saying, I'm with you, providing for you. I haven't forgotten you.
I imagine that must have been incredibly reassuring for them, especially, you know, considering they're going through such a difficult and uncertain time.
Hmm.
What are some of the specific examples of God's care that Dr. Oswald points out?
One of the most fascinating ones is the story of Jethro. Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, comes in and basically tells Moses, you're burning yourself out. You need to delegate some of this leadership. And it's through Jethro that God helps Moses organize and create a system that will allow him to effectively lead the people.
That's a great point. I never really thought about Jethro being part of God's plan, but it makes sense that even the best leaders need help sometimes. God can use the most unexpected people to support us.
Exactly. And that speaks to the importance of community, being willing to rely on others and to accept help. This is a lesson that's just as relevant for us today as it was for Moses. But then just when you think things are settling down for the Israelites, we encounter a major turning point, the golden calf incident.
Oh man, that's a tough one to swallow. They've witnessed all these incredible miracles, they've experienced God's provision firsthand, and yet they still turn away and create an idol. It's almost like you're saying, see you later, God, we've got this. Honestly, it's kind of disheartening.
It certainly is. But Dr. Oswald offers an insightful perspective. He suggests that the Israelites, in their fear and uncertainty, were essentially saying, God doesn't know our needs, he doesn't care about us. So they try to fill that perceived void with something tangible, something they can control.
So it's not just about disobedience. It's about a fundamental lack of trust, a failure to believe that God is who he says he is and will do what he has promised. It's a powerful reminder that fear can lead to some pretty bad decisions.
Yes, and this temptation to try and control things isn't limited to the Israelites. We all struggle with it, don't we? When we're afraid or insecure, it's easy to try to create our own solutions, our own idols, instead of trusting in God.
It's like we forget who's really in control. But even after that major setback, God doesn't abandon his people. What happens next?
Thankfully, God is a God of grace and forgiveness. Even in the face of this rebellion, he continues to work with them, to guide them, and to draw them back to himself. And this leads us to what Dr. Oswald calls the climax of Exodus, the completion of the tabernacle and the presence of God's glory filling that sacred space. It's a powerful image of God dwelling among his people, bridging the gap between heaven and earth.
I'm getting chills just thinking about it. It's almost like all their struggles, detours, and failures were leading up to this incredible moment of reunion. It really speaks to the power of forgiveness and second chances.
You said it. And this moment points forward to something even greater in the New Testament. Jesus, the ultimate tabernacle, comes to dwell among us to make his home with us.
This is really eye-opening. I always knew Exodus was an important book, but I never connected all the dots like this before. It makes you wonder what other hidden connections and deeper meanings are waiting to be discovered.
That's the beauty of Scripture, isn't it? There's always more to uncover. But for now, let's take a moment to reflect on what we've discussed so far. What stands out to you the most from this part of our deep dive?
You know, honestly, the idea that the way out is more about spiritual freedom than physical escape has really stuck with me. It's like It makes those epic stories about the plagues and the Red Sea almost secondary to this, you know, deeper journey of knowing God.
Yeah, that's a profound observation. It really challenges us to think about what our own way out might look like. Mm-hmm. What are those places in our lives where we long for deliverance, not just from external circumstances,
right,
but from those internal struggles,
yeah,
from spiritual darkness, from feeling separated from God?
It's like we all have our own Egypts to escape from, right?
You do.
And maybe your journey isn't always a dramatic exodus, but, you know, like a daily commitment to moving towards God,
yeah,
to understanding his character more deeply and to trusting in his guidance and provision.
Beautifully put. And as we wrap up our deep dive into Exodus, I'm going to leave you with this thought-provoking question. If the Israelites' way out was ultimately about knowing God deeply, how does that apply to your life today? What steps can you take to cultivate a more intimate relationship with God?
Right.
What might be hindering you from experiencing his presence more fully?
It's a powerful challenge, you know, to go beyond simply knowing about God to pursuing a genuine life-transforming relationship with him.
Yeah, I think so.
It's almost like we're being invited to participate in our own personal Exodus.
Exactly. And I encourage you to continue exploring Exodus with this newfound perspective.
Yeah.
As you read, pay attention to those moments where God reveals his character,
yeah,
his heart, his desires. Listen for his voice speaking to you through the stories and the laws. Allow yourself to be drawn into a deeper experience of his love and grace.
I know I will. This deep dive has completely changed how I understand Exodus. And honestly, it shifted my understanding of what it means to walk with God. I hope you'll take some time to reflect on these insights, to ask those tough questions, and to keep seeking that way out that leads you closer to the heart of God.
Beautifully said. Until next time, may you experience the freedom and fullness that come from truly knowing the God who is.